got your loving every day. Just like you know you should, you keep it coming, coming my way. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ain't no lie, tell you that I
ain't never felt so fine.
It's for sure, tell you that you're
up on the top, one of a kind. You bring your love to me, special delivery, special delivery. You give your love to me. You love me and that you always would. Then I said I love you. You said that that was good. Girl, you made a promise, said you'd never want me to go. Oh no. In the end giver, you took your love away from me.
And joining us right now is Frank Jekyll. He, of course, is one of the original leaders of the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. And, you know, I'm so sick of the pejorative term bubblegum music, because to me, bubblegum music means nice, you know, happy, upbeat music. And that's the kind of music the 1910 Fruit Gum Company made and is still making nowadays, right?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about how the band started. I know that eventually, first of all, it was a group called Jekyll and the Hydes, right?
Yeah, I had a group called Jekyll and the Hydes. We were a bunch of young guys making some fun music, mostly playing covers from the mid-60s, which was our era, and having a good time for ourselves. And we lost our drummer, and at that time, I had a friend who was a very excellent songwriter, singer, and drummer, and I approached him about forming a new group, and he brought along another guitar player, and that was the genesis of the Fruit Gum Company.
Now, how did 1910 Fruit Gum Company get its name?
There's a lot of stories there. It says on the first album cover that Frank Jekyll, me, was searching in an attic, and I found a bubblegum wrapper or gum wrapper in a jacket of an old coat or something that basically said 1910 Fruit Gum Company on it. But the fact is, there never was any such gum wrapper. So even if that sounded like a reasonable story, there does not exist in history any company that ever made gum called.
So who came up with the name?
Well, it was invented by the producer manager who we signed with, and he had already had the name and just wanted to kind of use it, so we kind of assimilated it. But years later, I like to collect old machines, electromechanical and mechanical things, and so I happened to come across and pick up some slot machines from way back when gambling was eradicated, maybe in the late 30s, early 40s era. And when you get the jackpot in the slot machine, the little bars that appear across the front, if you look closely at it, it's printed right on it, Bell Fruit Gum Company, copyright 1910. So I'm pretty sure that whoever invented the name got it from these old slot machines.
Wow. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Now,
maybe.
a lot of times in people's minds, and even on a tour that's going on now, you're associated with the Ohio Express, Music Explosion. You guys were all on the same label pretty much, right?
Yeah, we were the same label and same producer, manager. So that accounted for a lot of the association. Plus, a lot of the Ohio Express songs and the later Fruit Gum songs were really created by some studio musicians which is why they all sounded very similar. I think all the Ohio Express songs were in that vein. And the very late Fruit Gum, not the early Fruit Gum songs, were also. So Simon Says was basically us, but some of the later songs was not.
Well, I know that, for instance, Goody Goody Gumdrops was sung by a guy named Billy Carl.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of interesting because he was approaching Kazanets and Katz, our producer managers, trying to sign, you know, for his own group, etc., at a time when we were about to bring out another single. And being in charge and all, Kazanets and Katz said, you know, the song Goody Goody Gumdrops sounds like something that should really come out by the Fruitgum Company. So he just slapped the Fruitgum Company name on it and threw it out there. So it's really Billy Carl and his band, and they did the whole album. They did the, it's all them, yet it says Fruitgum Company on it. So the way record companies work, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, and there are some songs that were duplicated by both by you and the Ohio Express as well.
That's true. We tended to cover each other's tunes because they wanted us to, not because we desired to. They were, I don't know, looking for filler on the albums or something.
What was it like to be a kid from New Jersey, Linden, New Jersey, and all of a sudden, you know, February of 1968 comes, and Simon Says is a huge hit, and then right away in August, 1-2-3 Red Light goes the same route. They're both in the top four, top five. I mean, it must have been an amazing change of lifestyle for you guys.
It was a wonderful ride. It was a very, very, very fun time in my life. I had a grand time, great time. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
What was it like? I mean, you went on the road with groups like the Beach Boys and Sly and the Family Stone. I mean, what was it like for you guys to be part of that? I mean, now you look at it and it's a past life, but I mean, tell me a little bit about what it was feeling like at that time and what kind of things were happening to you that you just couldn't believe were happening.
Well, touring with the Beach Boys, I guess, was kind of astonishing because they were heroes as far as we were concerned. They were, the Beach Boys and the Beatles were two of the groups that we really, really admired a lot. We never got to tour with the Beatles, but we did get to do 10 stops on a tour with the Beach Boys and ride on their bus and even rode down the highway singing Beach Boys songs for fun with the Beach Boys. So it was it was awesome.
Now, were those guys friendly to you?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, they were. I mean, different personalities among the different guys, but for the most part, there was, you know, they were cordial. They were friendly.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are nicer than others. I got a call here one night at 11 o'clock from Mike Love to say hello, so I know he's a pretty good guy.
Yep, he was a nice guy.
But, I've heard horror stories in some places where acts would go with the big acts, and the big acts wouldn't even say hi to them.
Yeah, no, we didn't have that problem, because we did ride. I mean, it wasn't like they pulled a screen across the middle of the bus and said, don't come on this side of it, because this is our territory. We sat right where they sat. I mean,
yeah.
It was... I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, we were good buddies or anything, but by the same token, they treated us with a certain amount of respect that you would expect fellow musicians to give.
Yeah.
But by the same token, at that time in their career, they had been around for 6 or 7 years, so touring to them, I'm sure, had gotten very, very old. I mean, it got old for us real quick, because
yeah.
It gets old for anybody, because who likes to live out of a suitcase and be in one city one day, one city the next? As glamorous as it may sound to be on the stage, and that part of it is awesome, and there's nothing you can say or do to compare it with anything else. But when you're not on the stage, you're basically sleeping in some seat in a car, driving for, or flying in some plane. I mean, it's just that's not fun.
Yeah, I think that Paul Simon caught that drudgery perfectly when he said, "Each town looks the same to me. The movie's in the factory." And
yeah,
you know,
love that song myself, actually.
Yeah, it's a great song, but I mean, it really does capture that feeling of you don't even know where you are sometimes when you wake up in the morning.
That's exactly right. And if I think back to all the places I was, and I did keep a bit of a diary, so I do know what appearances we made and where. I can't honestly remember one from the next. I can't differentiate at all to speak of.
Well, did you guys have a lot of groupies as well?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, that's part of the genre, I guess.
That's a good part.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, how long did you guys, the 1910 Fruitgum Company last charted hit was in June of 69. That was Special Delivery.
Yeah, by that time, I had already left the group. I left in towards the end of 68.
Okay, so pretty much after 1-2-3 Red Light, you were left.
That's correct.
Yeah, why did you leave?
Well, there was a difference of opinion between us and the management team, the producer manager, and he had supposedly was supposed to pay us some monies, and he had not. So we got tired of listening to excuses and filed a suit. So he obviously didn't want somebody in the band that was taking legal action against him. So he invited me to leave.
So where did you go from there then?
Basically, I left music full time, but I've never left music out of my life. I've always done something musical on a regular basis up to this very day. I haven't gone more than 4 or 5 weeks without performing.
That's great. You know, one of the things that really disturbs me, and I've worked hard against it, is a lot of the groups out there that are touring with nobody from the original groups. They just, you know, someone buys the name, and they send, you know, there's like 15 drifters out there and coasters. And I hate that.
I'm really happy
that 1910 Fruca can be, at least you're out there along with, you know, one of the other originals, Floyd Marcus.
Yes, I don't like that either, but unfortunately, there's a commercial value associated with the name, and whenever there's commercial value associated with anything, it becomes a commodity, and it doesn't matter who was there, who did it originally or not. I mean, some people want to make money, and they're gonna market that, grab that name if they can, get the rights to it, and then use it, and that ends up with groups with no members.
So now, how did you secure the rights to go tour as 1910 Fruca & Company?
We basically discovered that the owners of the name from way back when had never registered it, so we went ahead and registered it.
So you own the name?
Yeah.
You and Floyd?
Yeah.
That's great.
And two of the new members, actually. There's four of us that own the name.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So there is some continuity to the name. And are you guys going to record anything new, or are you going to record some of your old stuff over again? Or?
Well, we did re-record some of our old stuff because we don't have the rights to the original recordings.
Yeah, so you want to make some money from them, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we did that. We haven't really done much to market those recordings other than from our website and you know, in personal appearances. So we did that piece of it. And
do you have 1910 Fruca & Company T-shirts and hats? And
sure, absolutely.
Oh, I assume it's at 1910frucaandcompany.com?
Yep, you can get the stuff over there.
So that's good. Now, see, none of it was sent to me. Poor me, didn't get any of these souvenirs. Too bad. I would have worn my 1910 Fruca & Company hat and shirt while I did this interview.
That would have been nice.
It would have been, but it didn't happen.
I'm going to have to talk to Mick.
I don't know.
Mick is our band member who does the business arrangements for us.
Now, you guys were interviewed recently for VH1, right?
Yeah, we did an interview last, I guess it was not that recent, it was last summer. And it was supposed to air in the fall, and it was supposed to be a multi-part mini-series kind of a thing on, mm-hmm. on Bubblegum, but for whatever reason, we ended up on the mixing room floor. So.
Now, I know Mars Talent is marketing a Bubblegum tour. Who's part of this?
I don't really know much about that, so I don't know quite what to tell you.
Oh, okay. Because I know that the Ohio Express is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The other group that's always associated with you guys, and I didn't really think they sounded anything like you, was the Music Explosion.
No, they were a different thing. They were Jeff and Jerry's first venture. So A Little Bit of Soul was the first success that they ever had. So that was back in the days when they were just learning the business and they had to rely on the group and the musician to perform and basically do what they did best and create.
Mm.
As time moved on, Jeff and Jerry became of a mindset that they could basically be the creative part behind it and they could put together whatever they thought was right, and the musicians and the artists really didn't matter that much. And that was unfortunate.
Very. It sounds to me like
that's when the cookie cutter sound that you talked about before came about, where the Ohio Express songs and some of the Fruca songs all sound like the same song, basically, only with different different variations.
Exactly. Tell me about some of the original members of the Fruca. Where are they? What's going on with them?
Well, there were five of us originally. Floyd and I are still active with the group today. Of the other three, Mark was the original lead singer. He is in North Jersey. I speak to him every once in a while.
That's Mark Gutkowski, right?
Mark Gutkowski, yeah. He doesn't desire to perform anymore. So he, as a personal choice thing, he could have been with us, but as a personal choice thing, he chose not to.
So what is he doing for work at this point?
I believe he's he markets pianos.
Really?
He works for music stores and does piano demos and sells pianos.
And what about Pat Carlin?
Pat's down in South Jersey, and he has a business down there where he builds these racks that sit on top of fishing boats, these lightweight aluminum racks that people sit up way up high. And so he, you know, very successful, multi-million dollar business. So he's doing very well for himself. And he has still performs quite a bit. Matter of fact, I went down and saw him perform not more than a month ago. but he is into a different genre than the Fruit Gum Myth thing. He loves playing rhythm and blues. So he, again, when we approached him about performing again, was not that interested because...
it's not his kind of music.
Not his kind of music, exactly.
And what about Steve Mordkowitz?
Steve Mordkowitz was out in, unfortunately, a sad story here. Steve Mordkowitz was out in Lexington, Kentucky, with his family, and I don't know what happened with him, but he ended up taking his life a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
When's the last time you had spoken to him?
I hadn't spoken to him in a couple of years, and sorry now that I didn't reach out, you know, but how do you know, you know? So in early January, late January, he just ended it.
You know, I'm very sad to hear that, but on the other hand, it gives me a chance to talk about something here that I've talked about with so many people, from Bobby Sherman to David Cassidy, and that is, you know, to be at the top, and all of a sudden, the spotlight's gone. It's a very difficult adjustment period. Did you have that same kind of adjustment when you left the group?
No, I don't think that any of us did, because I don't think we were at the top long enough to get into that mindset where that was real. To us, that was like a roller coaster ride. You get on it, you ride the ride, you have a great time, and then eventually it comes to the other end and you get off. You know, some people get to the point where they're successful enough, and for enough time goes by where their life is that roller coaster ride. Now those people have a hard time getting off because they don't expect it ever to end.
Mm.
That's my opinion, anyway.
Well, I think it's true, and it happens in TV shows with, you know, where they become huge successes and then they're gone from the TV show or the TV show ends.
Right.
Same thing with musicians. It's a,
exactly.
It's a difficult situation.
Yeah, I don't think that's what happened to Steve. I think Steve had issues anyway, and they just they got the best of him.
Mm. What do you think when you sit and you listen to 1-2-3 Red Light or Simon Says, you still enjoy it as much as you did years ago?
Sure. It's nice to hear something that you had a creative hand in still being popular.
It's interesting to note that, I mean, I don't want to say how old I am because I'm getting there, but I mean...
Not as old as I am, probably.
I grew up, you know, listening to this music, and when I hear it, it brings back great memories, and I think that's one of the, you know, that's the reason why nostalgia and oldies radio stations and everything are so successful. People, you listen to Simon Says, you listen to 1-2-3 Red Light or Indian Giver or Special Delivery, and you think about where you were at that time, and it was a great time, too. Then the late 60s, I think, it was some of those fertile times for great music as well.
I agree.
In fact, I would take the mid to late 60s and early 70s over any time period in this country's history for music.
Oh, I agree. I wholeheartedly. In fact, that's the music pretty much that I've played all these years and that I continue to play. If you ever hear me perform, I hope you like 60s music, because that's what I like to do.
That's what I like. I mean, you know, that's, as a matter of fact, it's interesting to note that... I mean, I love that music, and I grew up with it, but even the kids nowadays, they'll go up to me, hey, have you heard that group, The Doors, they're great, you know. They're listening to songs from the 60s, and they don't even know it half the time.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. I went to a neighborhood party up the street just not last night, but the night before, and one of the people whose house we were at has a young son, he's 17, and I asked him, well, what are you doing these days? He says, oh, I'm into this band. It's a great band. I said, Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
And I went, yeah, they're pretty good.
Yep, they are. But, I mean, it's really interesting because the kids think they discovered these things.
And my 17-year-old daughter, same thing. I mean, I don't try to force her to, you know, listen to any kind of music, because you can't. You can't really force anyone.
No.
But she suddenly found this 60s Greatest Hits CD set that I had, and she's starting to play and listen to all the songs off it on her own. When you get in the car, though, she wants the Top 40 radio on, you know.
So. Now, what does she think of 1910 Fruit Gum Company?
Oh, she's proud.
Yeah.
Yeah, she... It's nice.
Now, does your daughter have any proclivity in music?
Unfortunately, no.
Is she your only child, or do you have other children?
I have three daughters, and the older two, music was something that they were never interested in.
Really?
But the younger one, she likes to sing. She's in the chorus at school, and she's starting to learn to play guitar. So
there you go.
There's some possibility there.
Yeah. I always wondered about that, because, you know, you look and you see, you know, Jim Croce's son, and there's a lot of people out there that are sons of performers and daughters of performers. But I've also interviewed thousands of musicians, and many of the kids are artistic but not musical. They express themselves in painting or other creative means as well, writing, things like that.
Yep. Mm. Well, my two older daughters are into dance. They do dance.
See, so. There you go. And that's a creative art as well. It's music.
Sure.
And it's very related in terms of the brain. So that could be something they've inherited from you as well.
Possibly, except I have two left feet when it comes to dancing. So I don't know. I don't think there's any connection there.
I was looking at an old cover of your groups with when you guys were all dressed as Indians.
Yeah, that was just after me, so I'm not on the cover, unfortunately.
No. Can you imagine nowadays doing that?
I think the song Indian Giver is even an anachronism. I'm waiting for the day when we perform it where I walk off stage and somebody comes up, I'm thinking, wants an autograph and starts to, you know, get into it with me about how I'm stereotyping Indians.
Well, Mark Lindsay had said the same thing about Indian Reservation.
Well, but at least with his song, it's really, I think, slanted towards their cause.
Well, yeah, it actually is, but it's still... Indian Giver, though, is an expression that
it's just a,
is
it's
not
just a
PC.
Play, it's a play on words.
Yeah, it's not really PC.
It's not nice. I mean, but it's still, I mean, the song itself is not trying to be not nice, but that doesn't mean somebody can't take it that way.
Now, Frank, have you ever written any songs at all that you guys did?
Oh, sure.
Which
I
ones?
Have a few tunes, a couple of songs on the first album.
Yeah. Do you still you like to perform your own music?
I do, but I unfortunately with... life being the way it is, busy, I don't really get as much time to write as I'd like, so I haven't really written much in many, many years.
So what are you doing for work nowadays?
I work in computers.
You work in computers?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what end of computers?
I basically help train people how to use systems that run a particular kind of Unix environment called Unix. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that...
So I'm a Unix administrator, Unix implementer, Unix designer, Unix architect, so to speak.
How long have you been doing that?
Since the day I left the Fruitcom company.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you're an early computer pioneer then?
Yeah, I'll be actually celebrating 30 years with IBM on March 25th.
Now, do you ever wish that you connected way back then and became buddies with Bill Gates? Or
Steve
Jobs
or anything
like that?
No, I wish I'd have been smarter. I mean, I saw Bill Gates come up from nothing. And I had every opportunity to invest in what he was doing, but I wasn't smart enough to do that. So.
Yeah, I figured if I had known about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs years ago and invested in those, I wouldn't be working.
Yeah, same here.
Maybe hanging in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, work can be fun, and especially for you going out and touring. Do you have anything booked that we can tell people about?
Yeah, we got a couple of things coming up. We're going to be in Rahway, New Jersey. On May the 7th at the Union County Performing Arts Center. On May the 8th, it's not a public party, but we're going down to Texas to do a private auction. I'm not sure how you play an auction, but we're going to play an auction.
Is the President Bush going to be there?
Who knows? Maybe. Mm. Wouldn't that be funny?
It would be cool.
Then we're not doing, I think the next thing we have after that is July 3rd. We're doing an appearance in Ohio, North Ohio, but I really can't give you much details. It'll be on the website, though.
So folks can go to 1910fruitgumcompany.com and
yep.
Check and see what you guys are up to, and they can also order CDs and merchandise
exactly.
As
and
well.
The only other thing I can mention was two other things. July 2nd, we're going to be up in Middletown, New York. We're doing an outdoor concert there for the town, some kind of July 4th celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And then on August 24th, sometime in August, we're going to be in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. They have a music festival there in August.
When are you ever going to come to Boston?
Whenever you call us up and come up with a venue for us, we'll be happy to come up to Boston.
Yeah, we should try to get a...
It's a short drive for us.
Hmm?
It's not far for us.
No? Wait, do you guys still live in New Jersey?
Yeah, 4 or 5 hours.
Hmm. Should be good. We'll see what we can do. Maybe we can arrange some kind of a station concert or something.
That would be nice.
It was great to talk to you.
Same here.
And good luck with everything, and keep the music alive. It's great stuff.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too.